Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
This feels massive, doesn't it? This is one of the very, very, very big occasions.
Yeah, I think...
Well, come on, Ben. You put your drink down while you're on the podcast. Thank you very much.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck. We are in Auckland again. Barnsley lost his voice. Jonesy lost his shoe. I've lost two phone chargers, one pair of pants and my favourite T-shirt. But this is day 38 and we are still here. Just about holding it together, back in Auckland, back to where the tour started. 48 hours from kickoff in, I think we can fairly say one of the biggest games in the history of rugby union. We are also joined here by Peter O'Reilly, who gets a special mention, top of the class, Peter, because a week ago in the Reason to Believe podcast, Peter argued that Sexton Farrell was a stroke of genius. And, well, he's so close to right. Gentlemen, we've all covered sport as journalists for two decades plus, yet we're old and grey. We've been to World Cup finals, Ryder Cups, Olympics. We've seen enough to give this some proper perspective. This feels massive, doesn't it? This is one of the very, very, very big occasions.
I think, you know, I've played in some pretty big games. Nothing like this, obviously. But I've probably been nearer the highest level as a broadcaster. I think I've commentated on two World Cup finals, two Lions deciders, both in Australia. And frankly, 48 hours out, they feel as if they pale into insignificance. And they pale into insignificance because of all the nonsense that's gone into the start of this tour, all the negativity, all the panic, and all this is the end of the Lions. And you merge that with the fact that New Zealand have won the last two World Cups. New Zealand are the sort of great, big, fearsome, unbeatable knight in black. And you've got something quite astonishing, because 2 weeks ago, I thought the Lions were down and out. They're back now. And the other thing, the backdrop that makes it the most incredible sporting event, and not just rugby, are the supporters. They are incredible. And they have earned their day in the sun, or probably the Auckland rain.
Yeah, I think it's great for the people who took a punt on coming out here to watch the final test, because so many of us were predicting 3-0 before we came out here. So it's really reassuring that at a time when sport has become so much about preparation, so much about science, that you can have a situation last week where talking to a player on Thursday morning, he still didn't know if he was in the team or not. So 48, 56 hours out from a test match, he doesn't know whether he's playing or not. And that sort of thing just doesn't happen in professional rugby anymore. Usually you'll know at the start of the week, and the preparation will go into such detail that you're trying to minimise any sort of mistake. And yet you can have a situation where it becomes a force of will, of personality as much as of game plan, and that you can have a happy mixture of players coming together and overcoming the odds. It's kind of reassuring that there's still that sort of sense of adventure and the unlikely coming to pass.
Jonesy, where do you rate this in terms of big sporting events or big rugby events?
Well, first of all the Lions of things I've ever been to have all been bigger than the biggest of the others.
Yeah, yeah. We are slightly guilty of saying that in this business. But
no, we are. But I mean, I've said it from the very start. Never changed my mind. I've never ever said a World Cup I've been to see is bigger than any Lions test. And I stick with it. But my two colleagues here, I have to say, joking apart, have summed it up perfectly. I thought what Barnsley said was absolutely spot on in every respect.
And well done, Barnsley.
I'm only just glad that we have someone has been good enough to employ us to come down, because it's been, when you get here, it's just something magnificent.
Both coaches announced their teams this morning. We didn't expect many, if any, changes from the Lions, and they gave us none at all. Completely stuck with the 23 from last week.
Was there not one journalist who was suggesting that Joe Marlon might be brought onto the bench for his discipline?
I read that as well. Yeah, what paper was that in? What paper was that in?
Read it. Carry on, old. Sorry.
I can't remember.
Surely not. It wasn't the Times, was it?
No, surely.
I don't know if there are any listeners that are new to this podcast, but if so, they're lampooning me, which obviously wouldn't happen before. Now, actually, last week, in my absence, you lampooned me as an English pontiff, I remember.
No, we didn't.
You bloody did.
We reported that that's what you've been called.
Anyway, I have some news on that. For a short while, I was known by our fellow reporters as EP. in a quiet moment, I returned to that online story just to reassure myself of what had happened, and the reference had been taken out.
I
wonder if that's the power of the pod. Is if the aforementioned, the writer of the scurrilous story, listened to the podcast and realised.
Can I just confirm this? Did you actually write that Joe Marler should be in on the bench with his superior discipline?
No, I didn't say that.
He didn't use the discipline argument.
I did not say discipline. I did. I was discussing possible changes, and I thought that Marler
could come in.
Yeah, but not for his discipline.
For his haircut.
Yeah, and for his general demeanour in the New Zealand public. You saw the picture last week or in the week. He was going on the main drag in Queenstown, and the local Kiwi photographer took a picture of him, and he gave him the bird, and he looked pretty glorious with it.
It's interesting though, isn't it? I mean, we're laughing about Marler, but more often than not in England colours, Marler starts and McEwen and Pola is on the bench, and
Jamie George the same.
And segue in here, I'm quite concerned about Mako starting, because forget the ill discipline, it was an aberration. The bloke's not normally like that, but I think in big games for the last year, in scrums, he gets put under pressure. And even if he doesn't, there is a perception that might come from people like me writing it. And someone like Roman Poit knows the perception is that he is not a strong scrummager. And Poit, I think you'd agree, he's one of the referees. If he thinks one scrum is dominant, he will keep blowing and blowing and blowing. And do you not think, guys, there's just a possibility that perception could hurt the Lions?
Do you think that Mako's been successful in the scrum here?
I mean, yes, I do.
What, regularly or just...
Enough.
I think the Lions came into the series hoping that he could get parity at scrum time, which they've nearly achieved. I would say the psychological benefit of being able to announce an unchanged side is what swung Gatland. It's ironic that you come into the final test of a series normally where the tourists are dropping and that they need replacements and reinforcements all over the place, and yet it's the New Zealanders who are patching up their team. And there's a psychological benefit to just saying, no, we'll go at the same 23 again, a vote of confidence.
Mm. So Pete's referred to the Kiwi team, so we shall segue onto that. How many changes do they make, Peter?
Well, how many all told? Three in the back line?
Yeah, one position. Dags moved to the wing.
Yeah, Julian Savea has come in on one wing, from the holo, I suppose you could say. Lamape comes in at 12, and Jordy Barrett at 20, who played in the Under-20s World Cup last year, comes in for his first start. That's two people actually making their first start in the back line for the New Zealanders. It looks like very much a Wellington Hurricanes selection. It also looks like a selection that's designed to run at 10-12 again, to bring Surveyor off the scrum. Off the blind side of the scrum. What will be interesting is to see if Jordy Barrett takes the place kicks, and obviously how much the Lions go after him on what, as we've mentioned, is going to be a pretty dirty night by the sounds of it.
Steve, if you'd said 3 weeks ago that the All Blacks were going to be playing this back line, then the Lions would have been rubbing their hands with glee, would they not?
Probably, but I don't think any of them are exactly useless. You know, I mean, they're, I don't think they're useless.
They're not useless, they're just raw, aren't they?
No, they're different. I totally agree. And that has got to be to the Lions' benefit. I actually have to say, going back to what Pete said about Warren, I think that Warren tried really, really hard. In fact, I know he did, to think of something he could change, a player he could change, if there was any 50-50 call. But it's a measure of the team and how well they played last week that, in my opinion, there wasn't a 50-50 call. I actually don't think Mako is anything like as bad a scrummager as Stewart does. Because I think last week, they clearly didn't have the better of it in the first test. Last week, I thought just about they did. I know his backside tends to drift out a little bit, and they're trying to get him to keep tight to the scrum.
When you're doing angles with your hands, it doesn't. You can't see.
No, it's not very good visually, is it?
No,
it's not very good for radio.
No.
Yeah, which is good. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why we're all sitting here. That's why we're all sitting here naked. But no, that's a fair point. But he's got to keep his backside closer to Jamie George's. I think that's the best way.
Whether he's a good scrummager or not, Steve. Romain Poit will expect them to be straight. You'll hear him say all the time. And if he sees him move out, you know, I don't think Poit, I think he's a really good ref, and I don't think he'll be influenced by a home crowd. But if there's, you know, if you give a home crowd an angle and you give them something, that angle, I'm not going to move my hands there, then he might just take it. And I think New Zealand do have an edge there. And I think the Lions have to be very careful how they go in that scrum.
Bunsey, what are your thoughts on the youngsters, the new players in the back line? And the All Blacks pride themselves on strength and depth, don't they?
Oh, listen,
you took Whitelock and Ritalik out of their scrum in Chicago, and look what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so they don't really know what's going to happen, do they?
No, we don't. What we do know is. Super Rugby is a great sounding board towards Test Rugby because of the pace of the game. But then when you get to Test Rugby at the highest level, it's psychologically a different world. Now, Nani Lamape, as he showed for the Hurricanes and for the All Blacks, you give him one of those balls straight from the scrum half, straight to the inside centre. He'll carry people 5-6 metres. He'd get over the gain line. But also defensively, he was quite naive. Now, the strength of Super Rugby is what you do with the ball. The weakness is what you don't do without it. And I think, much as he and Savea together will be a real threat in that 10-12 channel, and poor old Shawnee O'Brien is going to have to tackle like a demon to cover the other guys, there's a weakness there.
Was it Lamape who got ahead of his inside man for the second try?
Yeah. It was. He's a fine carrier, but defensively, he's vulnerable. Jordy Barrett is... I mean, there's the old symbiotic link, the two brothers. He does understand what Bowden's going to do. But as you saw in the first half hour or so at the Hurricanes, I mean, I think he's a little bit naive defensively, and he's never been tested under any pressure. And if Johnny Sexton does not rain down an array of bombs on him, I'll be really disappointed. The high balls have got to come on Barrett, and they've got to smash him from the first minute onwards.
I'm up for it now. Barnes was just talking about Jordy Barrett as the big All Black weakness.
Potentially. He's a brilliant footballer.
He's the great red hope.
He's a brilliant footballer, but I thought positionally he was exposed now and again in the Hurricanes game. And frankly, if you're a bloke making a debut and it's going to be a wet and windy night and it's a test decider between the All Blacks and the Lions, and you're a fullback in those conditions, I don't care if you're JPR Williams, you're potentially a weakness on your first full start. It's not necessarily a reflection on Barrett. It's a fact that fullback can be a cold, lonely and miserable place when the pressure's on.
I think it is interesting about the weather, because I think it's not like the old days where if it poured down, everything would be muddy, and obviously the balls almost stick to your hands now. But I do think it's very interesting. We're all expecting a big gesture or a massive effort from the All Blacks and them doing something different. Now, in the first test, they tried to smash the lines really close to the breakdown, and the likes of Ritalik and Reid made huge space, huge yards, and also then they upset the Lions' defensive systems. And I think this time, it'd be very interesting if they do the same again. It didn't work last week. But to do the same again as you did in the first test and didn't work last week, it's not really like the All Blacks. So it'd be very interesting to see, and it's obvious to see how good the Lions' defence is around there. And I also think that you've got to be aware that I don't think the 10-12 combination that the Lions had, I think they'll spend all week trying to work it out. Last week they didn't, because for the first try that the Lions scored, they took the dummy run. The second time they didn't take the dummy run, and that led to the try. So I think they'll be really boned up on the Lions and passing out the back, etc. So it's absolutely fascinating tactically.
I was going to say, talking about New Zealand, and will they do what they did in the first test?
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain that the New Zealanders, had been decent weather, were going to play tight and drive inside that rush as they did in the first test.
Yeah.
Pull the Lions in, and then they were looking for the Barrett crossfield kick in and wide cutout passing game. And I think we don't know what would have happened, because Sonny Bill Williams got injured and the weather was so bad they couldn't do that. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see New Zealand come out with eight forwards, Jerome Kano there punching hard, and see if they can pull the Lions in and then go wide. It's the one thing defensively. The widest player the Lions have in defence is Jonathan Davis, and he is defending on the 15-metre channel. They are taking such a massive risk against the All Blacks. But at the moment, the speed of their rush is working. But it's a challenge. So I think if you're a Lions fan, you'll be hoping the rain keeps coming down and down, because it is a risk. But you've got to take one, I think, to beat them.
Can I ask Stuart a fly half-related question? Because I think if it is going to be raining, obviously you try to reduce the number of passes you make. Certainly the All Blacks have done that so far. But one thing that strikes me about Beauden Barrett is that when he takes the ball to the line, he often breaks the 5 metre law, the offside law, as an attacker, and that he takes the ball flat off the back foot of the scrum. Have you noticed that? That he's, you know, by law he's supposed to actually wait until the scrum half picks the ball up before he breaks that 5 metre law, but he seems to be moving so fast he must be breaking it.
Well, there's the sort of law of moral justice. If you're a positive attacking fly half and you get in the game line, the laws don't matter if you're trying to be positive in the game. This is obviously what happens with Beauden Barrett. He does take it to the game, and the problem is, he's in his entire career he's always been brilliant in the game line. He's just found his way through heavy traffic. At the moment, all he's finding is a great big welcoming committee, and it's causing chaos. And there are one or two passes going out now that are not what you expect from Barrett.
Right.
Just on the sort of the subject of what sort of rugby they're going to play, which we're talking about. So the All Blacks press conference today, this is Beauden. Beauden Barrett saying, "We're not going to deny that we want to use the ball more." It was followed by Aaron Cruden about 5 minutes later saying, "We'd love to go up in sevens this week rather than threes." So they're definitely, they don't want to do what they did last week. They want to do more. But if it rains, I think, as you say, Barnsley, the Surveyor and Laumappe, two big ball carriers off 9 or 10 will be a huge part of what they do.
It has to have annoyed them and stung them that Gatland is talking about having outscored them 3-2 so far in the series, but also about not having been stressed. 4-3, I should say. But also this whole idea of not having been stressed by the All Blacks. I mean, that really is a red rag to a bull, isn't it?
Do you think so? I mean, that's all in the hot air. Do you think they're really bothered by that stuff?
Well, I think Hansen would be definitely. Yeah, he would take it as a major swipe at the All Blacks brand. I mean, they don't just beat you; they beat you by playing the best rugby in the world as well.
He'd be furious. I mean, don't forget Hansen does a. Sort of every 2 months he does a sermon from his pulpit saying, "Oh, the Northern Hemisphere, you've got to try and run the ball more and attack more and score more tries." Pompous ass. So, the Eddie's come up since last week, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be the same this week. I'm going to show you.
Would anyone have made any changes to the Lions 23? What do you think?
I'd have said to McGrath, "You've not had the greatest tour. Go out there and start and really get stuck in." And I just said to Mako Vunipola, "Come on with 35 minutes left." And I think he is at his
best.
He's
been on Mako's case from the start.
No, hang on. No, wait. That's not been on anyone's case. If you listen to Warren Gatland, it's not about being in the 15 or the 23, the 15 or the bench. It's about being in the 23. It's not been anyone's case. You know, as Warren says, 1 to 23, it's all the same. I would have Mako on there for the last 30 minutes or so, and saying, wind it up. And I think it's very important that New Zealand's bench were poor, which is really unusual for them. They have got a good bench. They were poor. If one thing will be sharper next week, I think it's that. And I would fight fire with fire. And that's one of the reasons I'd have Mako coming off the bench at 50.
Well, on the bench, the Lions hardly used their bench at all last weekend. They left four people on the bench. So they've still got a weapon that they can use as well.
Yeah, and CJ Stander will have recovered by now. I think part of the reason why he mightn't have been used, but he would have had so much lactic acid in his muscle from playing 80 minutes on the Tuesday against the Hurricanes. Yeah, I expected more, but I can imagine being a coach in that situation when you're looking at someone like Conor Murray and he's going well and he's running on adrenaline and you say, well, leave him on. So sometimes the whole thing of using your bench almost, sticking to the plans that you had before the game, actually going against that shows is a sign of strength. It worked out for them. They won the game.
I would have brought Tio in to start purely because of exactly why we've spoken about the way that the All Blacks are going to play. I would have brought Tio in to start and then have the luxury of the two tens later.
So Sexton and Farrell didn't convince you sufficiently to start with them?
They played really well, but I just think that, you know, if there's one way, place where you've got to go this week, you've got to get ready for the backlash, and I'd rather have a bigger boy there.
Who improves the more? Obviously, the All Blacks will have 15 players to start with and probably to finish, so they have clear gains to make there. Both teams can learn. For me, the Lions have still not had a great performance. It was a great performance of spirit and character last weekend, but the amount of penalties they gave away in that period of 30 minutes around half time was poor.
I thought they were great in the last 20, truly great. In the 20 before that, they were miserable. Yeah. But the last 20 in attack and defence, I thought they were a truly great side.
They took it away from New Zealand's great strength, didn't they?
Yeah.
I thought also that they showed great spirit in the first half when the weather was really at its worst. They were actually the equalising penalty that they got just before half time kept the Lions supporters going. There was a sort of a symbiosis thing going on there. The fact that the Lions played the rugby in the first half.
What does symbiosis mean? Any idea?
It's I think it's that that problem you get in your foot, isn't it? Symbiosis, or is that syndemiosis?
That's gout, isn't it?
I do think that the Lions went in, even though it was all square, the score was all square at 9-0. I think they went in feeling that they were morally a step ahead, and they also knew that they had 30 minutes to go.
What did you just say? That they were?
Well, in terms of morale, they were ahead, even though scores were...
I just thought you used a word I hadn't heard. It's in morally.
Morally.
It's just when you live in a big house in Ireland, you say morally. Yeah. That's what it is.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, I can't wait for the day.
I've kind of forgotten my point now. I've been sidetracked slightly. Carry on.
It was very good, honestly.
Pete, is it been true that you've been heard whistling the tune of Omaru Atoji as you walk up and down the Auckland High Street?
No, that isn't true. Where did you get that from, Owen?
It wouldn't be fair to say. But
I did enjoy watching the clip of Alan Wynne-Jones singing it as he came off the pitch with the Lions supporters. I thought that was class.
Yeah, it is extraordinary, isn't it?
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so we're not singing the Omaru Atoji song, but we are now onto player of the series. I've got two in my head, one forward and one back, so... Barnes, you start with you.
Oh, Shawnee O'Brien. That's mine.
Very tuneful.
Yeah.
Pete?
I'm going to go for Jonathan Davis. I think, do you want me to talk about him?
Yeah, I guess that's what we're doing on the podcast, isn't it?
Well, I just think he's been a joy to watch because we mentioned earlier on about the fact that the New Zealanders think that they have the ownership of the great back play and width and all and skill and all that sort of thing. I think he's been a joy to watch, almost in an old-fashioned way, even though he's a very modern centre. He's a big guy, but his ability to pick a line and to pick it late I think has been great. I think he's
best midfielder in this series so far on either side, I'd say.
I would say best back so far. And I think the whole idea that someone like Sexton and him, and also Farrell as well, should be able to keep picking each other out in really heavy traffic it's been a joy to behold.
I'll tell you one thing about Jonathan Davis, where the New Zealanders have a massive problem. They can't pick his decoy line. If you watch those loop route moves of Sexton and Farrell, he's always the one causing the problem with a decoy. And, you know, when he does take a ball, he takes it hard and straight. When he doesn't take it, he's fixing, man. He's a fantastic season. End of season and a fantastic tour.
I think actually it hasn't really been mentioned very often on the tour, because we talk about the influence of Saracens and Leinster, I suppose, to a fair degree as well. But I think the fact that, you know, we've got the Lions have got quite a bit of value out of the great form of the Scarlets towards the end of the Pro 12. Not just Jonathan Davis, but Liam Williams as well, because it was Liam Williams who started the try of the tour in Auckland in the first test, and you know they've played with a degree of adventure. The fact that they took them on out wide in those conditions last week was a surprise, I think, for all of us.
Jonesy, man of the series.
I think Furlong has been incredible for an hour. He's been everything that you expect your tight end prop to be. He's not quite got the experience to last the whole time, but I think he's been fantastic. It's very, very easy to pencil him in to be the tight end prop in 4 years' time. But I'm going to go slightly offbeat and go for Courtney Laws, because he's played in some poor teams and has been good in the poor teams. The day the Lions didn't play well. And I actually really like the bloke. I don't know him, but I like him as a player. And he's been a hard hitter. To see him come on and have a little shake it all up towards the end of last week, I thought was excellent. So I agree with both my colleagues with their choices, but I'm going to go Courtney Laws because of there's something in him I really love, and I'm glad that it's been released on this trip.
Gallen's asked today who was the most unlucky not to make the Test series, the Test squad, and he mentioned one of my players in the series, which was Ian Henderson. I think he's been outstanding, and he mentioned Justin Tipperick, but I would say he's been unlucky. He just doesn't quite fit into what he's been trying to do. I said that Tipperick could have been a player he played on the bench this weekend. If it had been a dry day, I'd have had him ahead of Stander.
I'd have had Henderson ahead of Stander as well. I think they're both very unlucky.
I think Tipperick is massively improved from 4 years ago. I really do. I didn't rate him 4 years ago. I think he's been really good on this trip.
But the problem is Warburton and O'Brien finally matching, playing them together at sort of 6 and 7.
Left
they
right.
work really.
Oh, they were fantastic,
they were really
weren't they?
Well. Sam's attacking weaknesses are not exposed because of O'Brien's carrying, and the fact that Warburton is always at that breakdown enables O'Brien to just rampage around. I think to me, we've talked about the Lions player of the tournament. They've only played the one game together, but if they win this series, I think in history what we're going to remember is the Warburton-O'Brien axis, because New Zealand are so strong at the back row at home, and they got taken to the cleaners last week.
Okay, well, I think you're going to have to mention Talupe Faletau in that as well. I was reminded, strangely, Jonesy, tell me if this is mad, but the New Zealanders who remember 1971 say that Mervyn Davies was the guy that managed to upset the New Zealanders in the pack. When you think about Faletau's personality, it almost seems like he's a natural sort of heir, isn't he? He's quiet, gets the job done, and then obviously produces a big moment in last week.
I just think, people, don't forget, it's only very recently that people who were picking teams, whoever they may be, even having him in, said, well, he's gone, he's no good. And he was very slow to start the season, but I just always rated the guy. He's a great player. He does things actually superior in some ways. Some things he does is superior to Billy Vunipola. Obviously not all of them, but I just think he's a great player. He may have left Newport like the Judas he is,
Newport to Bath.
He did that well-worn Judas track of going from Newport to Bath. But I forgive him.
That's very big of you.
Yeah, I do.
Right, away from rugby, it has been possible to get away from it from time to time here, but briefly, not enough. Has anyone, would we like, let's discuss what have been our finest moments, our best moments away from the game. I'll start off with mine. It is rugby related, so I'm being totally hypocritical, but I went to see the camper vanners last Friday, which I didn't do with a great deal of glee, because they're always bloody camper vanners, aren't they? And you're right about what a jolly time they've had. But what stood out for me was they were talking about the hospitality they received. And there's a website here, it's a Facebook page called Adopt a Lion Fan. And they go on this website, they go on this Facebook page and they say, coming to Wellington, need a shower. And then 30 people from Wellington will say, I live up the road from the stadium, come and have a shower. And then they go in there, do their washing, they get invited in for dinner. And they've had this link all the way around the country. They say that the hospitality they've received has been amazing. Some of them said they haven't had to pay for a trailer park or anything, because wherever they go, someone says, come in here, park up, use our facilities, have dinner with us. Where are you going next? I'm going to Hamilton. Oh, I've got a friend who lives in Hamilton. And on they go. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about Kiwis and their pride in their rugby and that grates, and we all know that grates. But I thought this was wonderful. But what they did say, which I particularly like, was whenever you accept a Kiwi's hospitality, there appears to be a ground rule. When you get there, first of all, they'll tell you what they think of your rugby and what you're doing wrong. And once they've got that off their shoulder, then you're welcome in.
Yeah. And they usually get that off their shoulders after a mere 3 weeks.
Well, my non-rugby moment is kind of connected to that whole idea of Kiwi hospitality. I was fortunate to interview a former All Black, the week of the first test, a guy called Bob Burgess, who played for the All Blacks against the Lions in 71. And the following week, he actually sent an invitation to come to lunch. So on the day of the second test, it was lovely to get into somebody's house. His wife cooked for us, and we had a lovely time. She's actually Linda Burgess is a novelist, famous novelist over here, short story writer. So we had a lovely time, and there was another guest who is a vineyard owner who played against the 77 Lions and scored a try for Wairarapa Rapa Bush, and just against the Lions, and just to see the joy that they have for the Lions and the enthusiasm they had for the Lions, but also just to get away into somebody's house away from a hotel a few hours before a test match was a real tonic.
What does that house feel like? I have no concept of a home anymore.
Homely. It really felt homely. Yeah, you'll enjoy it when you get back, don't worry.
It's a great concept, Barnsley.
I love the first weekend. Whangarei, the one thing I missed on this tour are small towns. There haven't been enough of them. Whangarei had an amazing party going on. It was a huge reminder to everyone what the Lions means. And I don't care whether it's New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, or talking about the Lions brand, it's something that really did bring people together. And I know we've been cynical, and we can be, and to be honest, we're right to be, because the Lions is a bloody great big money-making operation, but it's more than that as well. And on that first Saturday, I was really touched by that. The other, very briefly, memory I'll take with me is a guy, red-faced, came up to me in the Langham Hotel last week and said, "You're Stuart Barnes, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "I recognise you." He said, "I've seen your face somewhere." He said, "Not for a long time." He said, "My name is McKechnie." And I said, "Brian McKechnie." And I said, "I was the Englishman in Cardiff the day you kicked that last-minute penalty to beat Wales when Andy Hayden dived out of the line-out." And he said, "It's nice to be the second most reviled Kiwi in Wales." What a man. What a man.
Bastard.
Hey, were you there, Steve?
I was there, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Of course it was, yeah.
The referee was Roger Quittenton.
Quittenton, indeed, the late Roger Quittenton.
My off-the-field moment, I don't think I've had it yet, actually. I think it comes on Sunday in the departure lounge when they call the flight. No, that's not unkind. I love being on Lions tours. In my job, I've always loved journalism far more than rugby. I've loved the people in rugby. But I've always loved being a journalist. I'd be very happy to go on the golf circuit or the cricket circuit or to go and cover other stuff or to be a cookery expert, which I could be, but I tell you what, seriously, I just love working for a newspaper. Some idiot, a former Labour MP, who came down here, had a go at me in the New Zealand Herald. Trouble is, I can't remember what his name was, but he had a go at me yesterday in the New Zealand Herald. And it was such a shocking, horrendous, useless piece that he wrote, technically. I thought, if you've got so little talent, son, and you're trying to make a comeback, you're validating everything I've said and done. So thank you, Sonny, whoever you are, for the piece in the New Zealand Herald. I'll get his name in a minute. And,
is he a New Zealand Labour or English?
Yeah, New Zealand Labour. No, he's an English Labour bloke.
He's not Peter Hain.
No.
I was going to say.
Anyway, but I just like being a journalist. Don't care where we are.
Okay, this is the last episode of The Ruck before the final test. Sorry, but hang on a sec. Bees is doing tears.
No.
I'm fine.
Okay, we're ready to go. There's 48 hours until the game kicks off. We will just finish with some predictions. Go around the table. Who's going to win? What will be the score? We're going to put Barnes's paws in. Who's going to go first?
I'm going to go New Zealand by 10 points.
If I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down with a few other people around this table, and I'm going to say the Lions by 2.
Very confident. Well, I've got it right last week against the odds.
Who got it right?
I did. I said the Lions would win the second test, if you remember.
Do you remember that? I said the Lions would win the second test before the first test.
You were on holding Queenstown when I said it.
Classic Joe. Just say it with conviction. And
no, I said it because Juliet, if you remember, confirmed it. I think that it'll be very, very close. It'll be within a score, maybe within a penalty. I think it'll be 3 points to New Zealand.
God, the whole point about this podcast is to disagree with Stephen Jones, isn't it? And I think New Zealand will win. I think they'll just get over the line. I worry that the Lions will put it all out there and concede a penalty at the wrong time.
So am I the only bloke who's tipped the Lions?
Yes.
I wanted to be with you boys when the boat went down.
Well, you're on your own.
Oh, well, see ya.
And on that bombshell, thank you very much for listening.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.